I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Call it an uprising, an insurrection, an attempted coup, domestic terrorism. Yesterday, a Trump-inspired mob stormed and occupied the U.S. Capitol as the House and Senate were certifying the results of the presidential election. Members hid as insurgents roamed the halls carrying American Trump and Confederate flags, vandalizing property and terrorizing those inside. This was after Trump spoke to the crowd, telling them to march on Congress, saying, "You'll never take back our country with weakness." Donald Jr. shouted, "We are coming for you." Rudy Giuliani called for combat justice. It's been 200 years since a mob attacked and overran the U.S. Capitol. We begin today's show with New Jersey Congressman Andy Kim. He's a Democrat who represents the 3rd Congressional District. And Andy Kim, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me this morning.
Nice to have you with us. How are you? How are your staff doing after this attack?
We're doing okay. We're safe. I haven't had any sleep yet, as we finished up at around 4 a.m. last night, finalizing the votes from the 2020 election as we were supposed to. So, I think we're all just trying to get our heads under ourselves as we prepare for this upcoming day.
Where were you when the mob breached the building?
Yeah, so I was in the Capitol compound. We were at that time just getting ready for the votes. So we were getting ready for our first votes. So I was heading towards the floor. Thankfully, I was alerted to the crisis, you know, before I had reached the floor. So I was able to take shelter and I was able to be safely in my office for much of the crisis. So I was grateful for that.
Were you able to stay with your staff? Were they able to shelter in place?
I only had one staff with me that day. The others, we really didn't want people to come in. We suspected some type of problem, certainly nothing to the extent of what actually happened. But yes, we were able to be safe in our office.
I mean, you just said that you anticipated there could be some kind of problems.
That's right. I think for us, it was more just concern for staff that might be, you know, walking or using public transportation. We just didn't want people on the streets, and that was our concern. And you know, I drove by the side of the Capitol in the morning and saw the gatherings there. I thought the threat was just if you're outside of the. I just never would have imagined that we would have the kind of threat inside that we'd have a lockdown. You know, I was a former U.S. diplomat. I've been in Afghanistan and Iraq before. I've been in lockdowns before, shelter in places before. But it literally just never occurred to me that something like that could happen at the United States Capitol.
Now, this is federal property, and there's so many questions. But one that's just so pressing is, why was this building so vulnerable? Why was this mob able to infiltrate, to get inside? We've all seen the videos. From your perspective, you work in this building, you know Washington. Why was it so easy for the mob to do what they did?
I am as perplexed as you. I'm asking that same exact question because we knew that there was going to be this, at least a protest. We knew what day it was going to happen, what time it was going to happen. We saw all the messages online. I actually worked as a staffer briefly on the Hill years ago when a gunman entered the Capitol and shot and killed a Capitol police officer. So I remember that day, and just to now be having now being a member and seeing this, it really confounds me. And this will certainly be something we have to follow up on.
But who is responsible for this property in D.C.? Is it the D.C. police? Is it a federal police force?
I believe it would be the Capitol Police. I believe that they would be the ones that would have main jurisdiction when it comes to the protection of the Capitol. I can't imagine anyone else being more in charge than they are.
I mean, the contrast to what happened this summer when the Black Lives Matter protests were happening, and you know, look at the military and police presence then.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, one thing that I'm going to be looking into today is that, you know, there was an immediate request from D.C. yesterday to have the D.C. National Guard deployed to the Capitol to protect it. And the person that has to approve that is the President of the United States. And for some reason, this approval was massively delayed while the Capitol was being ransacked. And eventually, it sounded like the vice president was the one that put that order for. I don't actually understand what happened. But again, it shows the lack of preparation, but perhaps more.
How much responsibility does the president of the United States bear for what happened yesterday?
Well, an enormous responsibility. I mean, he was the one that was inciting this. That is very well documented. All the tweets starting back in December calling for a day. The way that he talked about it, he still, as far as I know, I mean, certainly not yesterday, did not condemn it. In fact, he had that horrible video where he talked lovingly about his supporters. And like I said, you know, didn't take strong action to protect one of the temples of our democracy. And while we were hiding, while we were sheltering in place, where was the president of the United States? What was he doing at that moment? Was he just watching it on TV? You know, these are the questions that the Americans need to know.
Well, and there are a number of questions about, and apparently even some discussions about using the 25th Amendment, which would have to be instigated by the vice president and members of the cabinet, or impeachment again, or censure. Are any of those options that you favor?
Those are all options that we should be considering. I don't know what the cabinet is going to be doing, but certainly this president is a president that is not in the right mind. Certainly not yesterday. Certainly not someone that I think is fit to govern this country. And certainly I'm very fearful about what will happen just over the next week and a half until President-elect Joe Biden is inaugurated.
Well, we know that members of his staff are resigning probably even as we speak, but are you worried because the president has access to the nuclear codes? I'm trying not to be overly dramatic here, but I'm just trying to imagine, and we're getting reports that he is furious and maybe not mentally in his right mind. But are you worried about things like the nuclear code?
I'm worried in general for our country. I serve on the Armed Services Committee. I've worked in the Pentagon before. I've worked in the White House before at the National Security Council. I know how powerful the presidency of the United States is. I've been in the Situation Room in the Oval Office for decisions of major consequence. And I know how few checks there can be when it comes to national security on the president's actions. So, of course, I'm certainly concerned because what I saw yesterday was appalling, and just the absence of leadership in our country. And also, as you said, just no one in this country seems to know what kind of mental state the president is in right now. That worries me significantly. Mm-hmm.
How important was it for the Senate and the House to complete their work, which, you know, was concluded in the dead of night or early in the early morning hours, that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris be certified as president and vice president of the United States? How important was that to you, for the body to finish the job they started?
Marty, that was so important. It was important for me. It was important for our country. It was important for our democracy. It's so important that the night not end with just the only image being just the lawmakers in hiding and the Capitol in ruins Capitol being desecrated. This is something that we need to show the American people, the resilience of our democracy. And also, we just needed to get the business of the Constitution done. That's exactly what we were doing in a bipartisan, bicameral way. We're doing the work of the Constitution to certify the next president of the United States. We finished up somewhere close to 4 a.m. I'm still yet to sleep. We just needed to get that work done.
Here's a comment from Chris. He says, what we watched was fascism. What can be done with these people because they aren't going away? Now, there was a lot of video We know what they look like. I know there have been arrests. I heard this morning there were actually four people killed yesterday, but there have been arrests. But what should happen to the people who were caught on tape vandalizing the building?
Well, there absolutely should be accountability. It's mind-boggling to me that people ransacked the Capitol and then just left and had dinner in their hotel rooms or wherever they are. It makes no sense. The whole situation was just chaotic, and you know there absolutely need to be consequences for desecrating this. I was going around the Capitol at night. I came across this plaque that I had only seen once before that reminded us that George Washington laid the cornerstone. It's, the plaque said, under this plaque is the cornerstone laid by George Washington. You know, this is a temple of our democracy, and for it to be violated is so disgusting.
What do you advise incoming President Joe Biden, incoming Vice President Kamala Harris? What do you advise they do to try to, if not bring the country together, heal the country, do something to address what we just witnessed yesterday?
Yeah, you know, first of all, we have to approach this with a lot of humility. This is not something that's going to just, you know, go away. There's no magic wand for this. This is not something we can just legislate away. We have to first and foremost recognize this is going to be a long road to recovery for our nation. With the pandemic, with the economic recovery, with the issues of systemic racism and inequality, and just the brokenness and the sickness that is plaguing our democracy, for me, I worked as a diplomat, as I said earlier, under both Republicans and Democrats. I represent a district that voted for Trump twice, and you know, for me, I just try to think about this as saying, like, look, we have to heal this country, which means, you know, we got to get this hyperpartisanship, this toxicity, this otherization, you know, this idea that you know, we need to reestablish this idea that we are all Americans before we are Democrats or Republicans or independents. And I think that is missing. And I mean, I know it's missing because, you know, we saw what happened yesterday. And that wasn't just the only example of this. And this isn't just from the last 4 years. This has been decades in the making. And like I said, it's gonna take a long time, but we got to start somewhere.
Well, I appreciate you staying up and the rest of the day to join us on Radio Times. New Jersey Congresswoman Andy Kim, thanks for getting our conversation started.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's a Democrat. He represents the 3rd Congressional District, the first of four guests this hour of Radio Times talking about what happened yesterday in the U.S. Capitol, the mob attack on the U.S. Congress. We've got two guests waiting in the wings, historian Julian Zelizer, Anthea Butler, professor of religion and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Much more after that break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. After months of claiming that the results of the 2020 election were fraudulent and that the election was stolen from him, President Trump told his supporters yesterday to go to the U.S. Capitol saying, quote, "We are going to have to fight much harder." What followed was shocking, a mob overrunning the complex, vandalizing property and terrorizing those inside. This coup, this insurrection, this act of domestic terrorism, whatever you call it, was shocking and laid bare for the world to see just who we are as a country and the dangers of the president's years of lies and disinformation. The House and Senate were able to reconvene, and early this morning, Vice President Pence announced that Joe Biden won the presidential election. Joining us now are Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a CNN political analyst, author most recently of Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of the Speaker, and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Julian, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us and joining us by Skype is Anthea Butler. She's a professor of religion and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Anthea, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm okay. We got a lot to talk about. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us as well. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Julian, I keep going back to the title of your book, Burning Down the House. That's what we saw yesterday in a more sort of figurative way. The building still stands, but nonetheless, it was under siege.
Absolutely. It was just horrifying to see. I didn't think the book title was going to be descriptive of the moment, but that's what we were seeing. And it wasn't simply a mob of people on their own just going in there. They had been incited by the president for not just the morning hours, but for weeks and weeks already. And many Republicans had supported this. So it was the culmination of issues and actions that we have been following for a long time now. And it manifested itself in the ugliest way as an attack on the U.S. Congress as it was working to complete the presidential election process.
Anthea, much has been said about the fact that if this had been Black Lives Matter or a group of Muslims or a group of, you know, black or brown people who were gathering and essentially storming the Capitol, the response would be so different. I'm curious about what you observed yesterday.
I observed a bunch of white people wilding out. I mean, I don't know how else to say this. I mean, I observed, you know, Donald Trump's followers tearing down the bastion of democracy, the Capitol. And the other thing that I watched was the complacency in which some of the Capitol police let them in, let them crawl all over everything. And I couldn't help but think about what it would be. Black people couldn't even get past the stairs. The stairs would be filled with blood. If it would have been brown people, the stairs would have been filled with blood. You see, this is where I think that white America gets to see what all of us have been talking about for years, centuries even, the disparity in treatment, the ways in which whiteness wants to take over and consume everything if it doesn't get its way. And I think this is a moral failure for all of us. It's a moral failure for this nation.
Let me pick up on that, and I'll toss it first to you, Julian, but Anthea, I want to hear from you as well, because I was thinking about this morning. You know, last summer we watched a police officer kill George Floyd as he called out for his mother, as he said he couldn't breathe, and we got to see this, and we got to see what a lot of African-American people have known for a long time about police brutality. It's real. Black Lives Matter isn't real. And in a sense, we saw the same thing yesterday. We saw who we are as a country. You know, we talk about being a shining city on the hill. That city is in tatters. And I wonder, Julian, if you could speak to that.
No, I agree. I mean, I agree with all of these comments. At some level, I still am processing the ease with which everyone was able to get into the Capitol. Anyone who's been there understands that it's not as if there's no security there, especially since 9/11. The entire city, all the major buildings are very well secured. So the fact this happened is something that needs investigation. And it is a feeling of the country being in tatters. I would say, and Congressman McCarthy made a speech on the floor last night that this is a culmination of polarization and division. This is not being done by everyone. This was done by the president's supporters. It was done by conservative elements of the polity. And it was about the Republican Party and where it is in 2020. And I think it's important to talk about it that way. Otherwise, it's a kind of amorphous description that doesn't get at what happened yesterday, where supporters of the president were trying to stop the final stages of the election through physical intimidation and violence.
Julian, you're saying this is not America, this is the Republican Party?
Yes, I think yesterday is about that. I don't think the entire country is on this page at all. And this is, it's a question about a party right now. And the specificity is important. Otherwise, I think it's hard to get at the roots of what's going on.
I hear you. Anthea, what are your thoughts?
Well, Julian, I want to say I respect your work first, but I'm going to respectfully disagree that this is the whole country. We all get tainted with this brush. Yes, I agree it is the Republican Party. But the Republican Party, as I wrote back in 2012, has turned into a religion. And it's a religion of violence. It is a religion of white supremacy. It has linked up with evangelicalism and other factions in this country to be at its pinnacle moment of it, where Donald Trump is leading his followers to storm the Capitol. But I think it's also important for us to say this big point. It's not just the people on the outside. It's the people on the inside. You had senators who oppose the electors. You had over 100 congresspeople who opposed the electors. And so we can't just say that it's the Republican Party. It's the Republican Party, the people who voted for it, the people who approved of this by giving Donald Trump their vote. Oh, no, this is America. And that's the problem. It's hard for everybody to see that, but this is who we are. This is who we are at this moment.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. We got a lot of comments as well, and I do want to play just a short clip from President-elect Joe Biden from yesterday. But that's Anthea Butler, Associate Professor of Religion and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Julian Zelizer with us as well. He's a Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University, and we're talking about what happened yesterday, what that says about our country, what that says about our political system, what it says about our president. Here's President-elect Joe Biden addressing the nation Wednesday, decrying the events at the Capitol. Let's give it a quick listen.
This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition. And it must end now. I call on this mob to pull back and allow the work of democracy to go forward.
Julian, what options do you see President-elect Joe Biden, President, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, as they begin to take office 2 weeks from, I think it's today, what's their charge as we try to address what happened yesterday?
Well, he faces a pretty tough path ahead. I think one issue that's been out there is what role does the new administration have in terms of holding President Trump accountable? And that was a discussion going on before now about the many ways in which there have been allegations and evidence of abuse of power, of corruption. And I think after this, it's going to be a lot harder for President Biden to say, we're just going to move forward. We're not going to look backward. I think the Department of Justice or some kind of investigative committee is going to have some important work to do to show that the new president is taking this seriously. The hardest challenge is President-elect Biden has continued to talk about a return to normalcy and about his efforts to reach out to the Republican Party. But this is the Republican Party, as we're saying, top down and bottom up. And I just don't know how do you deal with a party that's in the space that it is when the events yesterday unfolded. So it's going to be tough. But finally, I mean, there is a leadership challenge for him in really not being soft about what has gone on with the Republican Party and what senators like Hawley were doing when, you know, he gave a fist up salute to the protesters right before he entered the Capitol yesterday. And he's going to have to be clear eyed about the problems and where they're coming from.
Anthea, let me ask you what you think about the next 2 weeks and add a question from Naomi, who says, can acting cabinet secretaries vote under the 25th Amendment? And if so, what's to stop Trump from firing those who might question him and installing loyalists? Now, we've got 2 weeks before Biden takes office, but nonetheless, there is talk about the 25th Amendment. It's, you know, not as easy as that might sound, but what are your thoughts about that? What do we do about a president? How do we protect ourselves from a president with 2 weeks left in office?
Well, I think we have to, because basically in these 2 weeks, we've already seen the havoc he could create in 4 years. We already have seen what he could do yesterday by just saying, go march down to the Capitol, while he drove back and sat in the White House and watched everything that happened. I think that, and this relates to what Julian was saying about Biden, that if the if there's not any action, if we don't try to invoke the 25th Amendment, if there's not an impeachment that's brought to the House immediately within the next, 48, 72, 100 something hours, then this means he gets off once again. And it makes it that much harder for Vice President, President-elect Biden to do his job, because it sets him back on his heels to begin with. He's already back on his heels to begin with because he had to inherit all the mess that Trump did, plus the virus. Sure. Now he has to, take on an insurrection. And here's where I want to say something very important, because we've talked about Republicans, but let me say something about Democrats for a minute. Democrats are too willing to let bygones be bygones. This happened in an Obama administration. It's happened time and time again. We're just going to let that go. We're not going to prosecute anybody. We're not going to do anything. And this allows Republicans to continue to do the dirt that they do, because there's no punishment. There's nothing that happens to anyone. And I think this is a moment where the Capitol gets stormed. If they don't do something, then this just says you can do it over and over again.
Julian, what do you think about the 25th Amendment or even impeachment?
I think both have to be on the table. I think it's exactly right to say that if nothing happens after a president has been involved with this, not only is it a danger in the next few days until he's out of power, what will he do and how will he use his authority? But what does it say that a president incited a literal insurrection against Congress, and then nothing happens? There's no effort to invoke the 25th Amendment, no effort to impeach. It just eliminates any sense of guardrails at all. And that's how we keep getting into this problem. That was the argument behind the impeachment, that if you allow this to happen, then he can really do whatever he wants. And that's exactly what he did. So there needs to be some kind of response. The 25th Amendment's tough, though. It's going to have to be from within a cabinet that's extraordinarily loyal to President Trump. And that's a big push, and it will ultimately need the support of a supermajority in Congress. And you can see a lot of Republicans are not bolting from the president even after yesterday.
Yep. Here's a comment from Evelyn. She said it would be interesting to hear about the tipping point required to get Republican Congress members to split from Trump, like Graham and Loeffler did actually yesterday. And Thea, I wonder if you could speak to that. And there's a lot of talk about, enablers. If you know anything about Donald Trump, and I can't tell you how many shows we have done about our president in the last 4 or 5 years, frankly, is this was so predictable. This is what he does.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as somebody said on Twitter, they sold merchandise, okay? They knew this was coming. Everybody who's been watching Parler and all of the rest of these, conspiracy sites knew that this was going to happen. But I think the way that you sell this to these people is that, history will put you in the bag. As someone said yesterday, that basically not to talk to the president or not to try to engage him, because you might be put in to a legal situation because of what has happened. You might be, brought to trial. You may do something else. And so I think the way you sell this to everybody right now is like basically say, if you want to come out of this smelling a little bit less than the sewage that he has put on top of you, then you should go for this, because it's not just about you anymore. It's about the country. And if you do care about anything, you should go along with the 25th. And I should just say this, because this is really important to say. Basically, the House isn't back in session until after the inauguration. The Senate has adjourned to the 19th. So that is out of the question right now in terms of an impeachment. But definitely now what we have to look at is 25th Amendment, or else they're going to have to like lock him up in a room or something, which I don't think is going to happen either.
Julian, I'm thinking about Nixon and Watergate, the stories of him drinking and walking the halls of the White House, talking to the portraits on the walls. And finally, some Republicans went and frankly talked some sense into him, basically saying it's time for you to resign. Is that even a possible scenario in 2021? Do we have Julian?
I would be very dubious that that's going to happen. That's missing.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I just put it out there.
Hello?
Yeah. Do we have Julian? All right. We're going to have to. Let's see if we can fix that. And let me go back to you. Let me go back to you, Anthea, while we try to get to. Okay, he's back. Go ahead, Julian.
Sorry, I think that's not likely. The idea that the Republican Party that has supported and enabled, enable isn't even the right word. This is a Republican Party that's been an active participant in the president's efforts. No one's going to go to him now and say resign, nor would he listen if they did. I think the unity of the Republican Party, other than a few people like Mitt Romney, is still relatively strong. And even last night, after all of that, some senators still went ahead with the protests of Arizona and Pennsylvania. So that gives you a sense of why there's no, you know, quote unquote, wise men who are going to come and ask the president to step down.
This is a weird question, but you are a historian. I mean, how will history look back on this moment?
I don't think favorably. This will be an ugly culmination, manifestation of what's been happening, and both the elimination of political guardrails, but a radicalization of the Republican Party. And I think that's how it will be examined. And I can't imagine there'll be many people looking back favorably to an effort to attack the U.S. Congress.
Let me read a couple of comments and we'll take a short break. And then we've got a third guest to join our conversation. Victoria says, people keep calling them protesters. They were terrorists. A comment from Alan, black and brown people would have been tear gassed, shot and arrested if they attempted this coup. Comment from David, wondering why the authorities in D.C. were so unprepared. A comment from Bob, isn't it time for Trump's cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment and remove him from office? Just a smattering of comments that we're hearing from our listeners. Again, talking with Julian Zelizer, Anthea Butler, and Will Sommer from The Daily Beast, who was there covering the insurrection for The Daily Beast, will join us after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The Washington Post has tracked the thousands of falsehoods that Donald Trump has told while president. It turns out that one of the most dangerous ones that he had been promoting for months was the election was riddled with fraud and was stolen from him. Those words had disastrous consequences yesterday with a mob carrying Trump flags and wearing MAGA hats stormed the U.S. Capitol, vandalizing the complex and terrorizing those inside. Joining us now is the Daily Beast Will Sommer to talk about how the language and conspiracy theories of groups like QAnon have infected the president's rhetoric. He covered the riot for the Daily Beast. And Will Sommer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Julian Zelizer, history professor at Princeton, staying with us. Anthea Butler, associate professor of religion and Africana studies at Penn, also staying with us as well. Well, just a couple of questions about what you observed yesterday as you were covering this riot. What was that like?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it was obviously a very, very surreal experience, as I think it really was for anyone who witnessed it. You know, in the lead up to it, I think, you know, certainly there was a ton of online chatter about this plan to storm the Capitol. But I certainly never thought it would happen. You know, I talked to so many people outside, and really violence was really on everyone's mind, and frankly, as a positive in their minds. You know, I talked to people who were, you know, you might just think of as your neighbors or your grandparents, who were saying, you know, if Biden's vote is certified today, you know, we're going to get violence today or tomorrow. Maybe we get a new civil war. And they thought about this as a great idea. And then, you know, as the vote count began, they broke in, and it was really chaos. I mean, I was outside for it, but, you know, it was tear gas everywhere. People were, you know, sort of urging one another, telling them this was their last chance to fight for their country. You know, it was a really, really violent atmosphere. And you could sort of see how people had been just so radicalized by the president's plans and these online conspiracy theories, and just thinking this was sort of this apocalyptic moment.
So they truly, the people that you talked to, that they truly believed that this election had been stolen from the president and from them.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think I would say that about everyone here. I mean, certainly I think there were sort of some provocateurs who were trying to get across their own sort of right-wing agenda. But certainly that sort of the rank and file people I talked to, they were convinced, let's say the more moderate members were convinced the election was stolen. I talked to plenty of people who are convinced by, say, the QAnon PCBA conspiracy theories that Democrats are literally satanic figures, and that they were convinced, like apparently the woman who was shot yesterday was, that, that you know, this was going to be kind of a big kind of cleansing bloodbath.
In fact, I was looking at your Twitter feed, and the woman who was shot yesterday and killed, I should say, seemed to sign on to, you know, obviously it's a terrible tragedy for someone to be shot under any circumstances, but that she was a follower of QAnon. Will?
Yeah, she was very well versed in QAnon. I mean, this isn't someone who, you know, saw a blog post once and retweeted it. You know, since at least February, she was really into QAnon. And the thing I think people often miss about QAnon is, first of all, this is like a very anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. It's based on Jewish people drinking blood. And then it's also a very fascist one that is based on the idea of Donald Trump, you know, just holding the mass executions of his enemies. And she tweeted that she thought yesterday was going to be basically the day that would happen. So, you know, yeah. She appears to have been very motivated by these kind of violent fantasies.
You know, well, let me read a comment that one of our listeners left on our Facebook page. Katie said, wake up. This was Antifa and not normal citizens of the United States. She goes on to say the Democratic Party has spewed hate for so long and slept with Antifa along the way. I won't go on from there, but you get what I am getting at. How much of the Twitter sphere is saying that this was Antifa dressed up in MAGA attire?
Sure. I mean, so this is, you know, it's interesting. I think someone summed it up well that, you know, this claim is certainly blowing up, but essentially half of MAGA world right now is saying this was Antifa, and the other half is saying, you know, look at this great selfie I took after I stole Nancy Pelosi's podium. You know, these are, you know, I can share a little tip for your listener. The company that essentially what people are saying about this Antifa thing is there was this hoax published by the Washington Times that Antifa was infiltrating, and they had facial recognition data to prove it. Well, the company at the center of this right now, we're publishing a story in the next hour that the company that supposedly claimed this says it's all a hoax and that they want a retraction from the Washington Times. But this is a great example of how a lie can get around so fast in social media. This is a totally spurious story, and within hours, Matt Gaetz was citing it on the floor of the House during the vote count. So, and you know, we're going to have a point where about half the country goes on to believe this was Antifa.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, all three of our guests, and I do want to play a clip from Mitt Romney from last night. That's Will Sommer. He's politics reporter for the Daily Beast. He covers conservative media, and he covered the protest, I won't call it the protest, the insurrection, the coup, the attempted coup yesterday in Washington, D.C. Anthea Butler, associate professor of religion and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania, and Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Let me play Senator Mitt Romney. He spoke on the Senate floor last night, and this was following the storming of the Capitol building, and this was as the Senate resumed counting Electoral College votes. Let's give it a listen.
No congressional audit is ever going to convince these voters, particularly when the president will continue to say that the election was stolen. The best way we can show respect for the voters who are upset is by telling them the truth.
Anthea, let me get you back in on the conversation. It was, I thought, such a simple but eloquent and important thing that Mitt Romney said last night, which is you don't need a commission to sort of talk, you know, sort of figure out what went on. We have to tell the American people the truth.
Well, if the American people can't see the truth of what's going on right now, it's admit to you part of that has to do with some of the right-wing media that has been promulgating the kinds of things that Will talked about, you know, Antifa and all of the rest of the lies. I think, you know, Mitt Romney's statement is great, but it belies the fact that this is going to take an undertaking for us to really examine all of the things that have happened in the last 4 years and to not just say we tell people the truth, because the truth is relative for people right now. I mean, your truth is not their truth. And I think that's really important when we're talking about QAnon and all the rest of this is that they don't see the truth like you and I see the truth or anybody else sees the truth. They are in a kind of a world, a complex conspiracy theorist world in which they have constructed what the truth is. They're pedophiles. Democrats are horrible. We are saving the nation. This was the storm. And so until you understand that, we can't really have a conversation about what truth is when, you know, a good deal of the nation doesn't get truth.
Julian, have we been here before?
Well, we've been in divisive places for sure. You can go to the worst moment of a civil war where the nation breaks apart, or you can go to the 1960s where people have fundamentally different understandings of key issues, from race relations to Vietnam. What's different is just how it's complete in this moment, meaning that there is this idea that we don't agree on a basic set of facts, that you have some politicians who play into just total falsehood, not occasionally, but on a regular basis. And we were just talking about the Antifa story this morning. Congressman Brooks tweeted this out, this story. And I think the normalization of this kind of fracture is what makes this distinct. It's on small issues, and then it's on big issues, and it's being supported by a massive, very powerful media infrastructure that makes it hard to undo.
Will, you cover conservative media. How is conservative media, whether I guess it's Fox or OAN or others, how are they covering what happened yesterday?
Well, I haven't watched this morning to be. Oh, Will, sorry.
Okay. Hold on, Julian. Will, go ahead.
No problem. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think what we're seeing from Fox News and One American News and Newsmax is either promotions of this sort of Antifa conspiracy theory or this idea that, you know, mostly, mostly unacceptable protests with a few outliers and, you know, that when you steal an election from people, you know, this is what happens. I mean, this the same sort of language that we've been seeing from President Trump as well.
Let me read a comment from Nicole. And Anthea, she wants you to answer this. Can Professor Butler speak to the religious imagery used by protesters yesterday? I saw a cross, Jesus 2020 signs, and Jesus Save signs all being weaponized. Can you speak to that?
I'm so glad you asked that question, Nicole, and I want to address you directly. I think that that was the biggest thing that most of the press missed yesterday. In addition to erecting a cross, they also erected a gallows. There were lots of signs about Jesus saves and all of this. I mean, this thing could have turned so badly if they had captured people and, you know, literally tried to kill them. I don't put this past them. But to talk about the religious piece of this for a minute, this is part of what Christian nationalism does. And I think that, you know, their religious leaders yesterday had said things, but I mean, I would point you to look at what Franklin Graham said, that people had their grievances, you know, this was not a, you know, didn't try to downplay it. But there are religious leaders in this country who have played a role in what happened yesterday, that they see this as a religious quest. And so in my book that's forthcoming about white evangelicals and racism, I talk about this Christian nationalism. And Trump has been the epitome of all this, and he's managed to bring all of this together. So when I say that the Republican Party is a religion, I'm not kidding. It is a religion, and it has forged these kinds of images of white supremacy and Christian nationalism together to fulfill its cause.
Here's a comment from Stu, and Julian, I'll put it to you. He says it started when Reagan began teaching Americans that the government was our enemy. It was only a matter of time when someone like Trump came along. Do you agree?
I think there's a truth to that. I think the basic anti-government argument that Reagan laid out as government being the problem, not the solution, has animated right-wing extremism. We've seen this many times when the Oklahoma City terrorist attack came up. It was also using this kind of language and philosophy. And I think, you know, Reagan isn't responsible for what happened yesterday, but his philosophy has guided a lot of the far right. And I would add from my book, I think there were other Republicans like Newt Gingrich who pushed a kind of no guardrails partisanship where anything was permissible. And in the 80s, they set the template for a lot of what we're seeing right now.
Well, this is having you look into your crystal ball, but, you know, Trump will no longer be president after 2 weeks. What do you think is going to happen to this movement, his supporters, the people who believe so deeply in him? What is going to happen to them?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. I think, on one hand, possibly, these groups lose a little steam when they lose the White House sanction and they go underground for a little while. Alternately, I think, in particular, as other people in the GOP sort of abandon Trump, I think potentially more mainstream Trump supporters will become more radicalized and sort of decide that the only sort of way to be into Trump is to get into one of these extremist movements, and that they sort of will use that as an outlet when he's out of power. And certainly Trump isn't doing anything to dissuade from that. I mean, he's kind of doing a laying on of hands to the QAnon promoters who have been elected to Congress. And, he has no sign that he's praising the rioters. So certainly I don't think they're going away anytime soon.
Here's an email from Brian, and Anthea, I'll put this to you. He says, I don't think we're comparing apples to apples when we say what would the response have been if black and brown people stormed the Capitol. I think the more appropriate analogy in question is, what would the response be if President Obama had instigated and incited a crowd of black and brown people that stormed the Capitol? Anthea, you want to speak to that?
I know that this must have been a rhetorical question because he knows exactly what would have happened, right?
Right.
And I think that we can look back, and I want to go back to something. This is not part of his question, but I want to say this. We can go back to the Republican intransigence that started the night before Obama was, installed as president of the United States, inaugurated back in 2009. And people thought the Tea Party was gone and all this, and look at where we are now. And we know exactly what would have happened. I mean, one of the things that you didn't bring up is like one of the religious kind of things that happened yesterday, and I'll bring this back up, is sure. That actually what happened, they reenacted the death of George Floyd on the steps of one of the churches they tore the Black Lives Matter flag banners down from. That's unconscionable. I mean, that's absolutely.
This happened yesterday?
This happened yesterday. There's pictures. Yeah, there are pictures. Oh, you can find them on Twitter. I'll put it up on my account after we get out. And so what I want to say is this. I mean, I think that we all know that there's a double standard for, African-Americans, people of color in this country, vis-a-vis white men. And I say that with all directness and all seriousness. And yesterday just made it boldly clear that if nothing gets done about this, there will be no impunity for white men wilding out, killing people, doing whatever they do on the streets. And most importantly, always remember that there's law enforcement there to help. Yeah. And that's what I think is the disgust and the shame that I feel this morning about this nation, is that we continue to do the same things over and over again, and nobody learns anything from history.
Julian, I'm going to give you the 40 seconds, the last word, looking at, and toss this in there. There was a picture of a man carrying a Confederate flag walking through the Capitol. Shocking, of course. But, not so long ago, there were Confederate statues in the U.S. Capitol, part of the display there.
Correct. I think this is all part of a bigger story. Keep saying the radicalization of the Republican Party. Those are symbols of what's in the mix, and accountability is what should be the goal for those who don't support what happened in the next few months. It's essential that someone is held accountable, that a party is held accountable, if we're ever going to start a process of improvement.
Well, my thanks to all three of you for joining us on Radio Times. Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He was on Radio Times last year on his book, Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich and the Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Anthea Butler, associate professor of religion and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. She has a forthcoming book, Will Summer, politics reporter for the Daily Beast, covering conservative media. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on
Thanks.
Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.